We need a producer. Someone who can write snide comments on a manila envelope a la Roz from Frasier and slap it against the window. Wrap it up. John's giving us the wrap it up signal. Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a pseudo game show podcast hosted by me, Nate Bergoglio, with my usual guests, John Peros and Shannon Page. We are recording today in the War Room at Steno, and we have a special guest, Sarah Smith. She works in advertising and is a faculty member at CU Boulder. But most importantly, Sarah and I went to college together, and she's probably one of the most theatrical human beings that I've ever met in my entire life.
That's charitable of you.
Yeah, I was trying to think of adjectives that accurately would capture it without implying somehow that there was a deficit, because there isn't. Like, you're just, you're larger than life in a very, bold way.
A bold way, yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, truth be told, I've actually toned it down quite a bit as I inch towards my 40s.
Oh, yeah.
Would you
object to me telling a story about an art project that you did in college?
No, I have no objections.
Okay, great. So, one of the, just to give you guys a little bit of background. So, Sarah and my friend Jared and my friend Melody, as well as, like, Levi and Becca, several people who hopefully will all be on the podcast at some point, were all in the same Steve Katz taught writing course at CU Boulder. Sarah had done a project at BMOCA, which is the Boulder Museum of Contemporary Art.
Correct.
That she had Jared in as her actor, husband, boyfriend.
Companion.
And the premise of this performance was a lot of very evocative moaning, followed by Sarah sitting up to a spotlight and saying, "I can't come." Right?
That's correct.
Is that right?
Yeah, that, yeah. You nailed it. I'm impressed, actually. And more than anything, it was a kind of meditation and rumination on where we were sexually in a post 9/11 moment. Okay, so flashbackwards, you know, to 2001, 2002, and, you know, really grappling with femininity and masculinity in an age of terror and in a moment of deep concern.
Yeah.
So that's
and you did quite a few things like that, because you also did a Starbucks sort of live art performance as well, where you were in a nude bodysuit
kind
and
of
had
written
people write
on the
on
body.
You,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And so yeah, and so, and that was much more, I think, a gesture of what happens when we become so focused on the things that we consume that the things we consume us. So.
So we're really counting on Sarah to bring that tonight.
Like I said, I've toned it down quite a bit. And one of the things you didn't include, you know, while I am on faculty at CU, it does happen to be at the lead school.
Ah,
so,
right.
Yeah, it's a little bit more buttoned up these days. But the aim is that it isn't any less provocative. So.
Yes. Well,
so
good.
Thank you, Nate. Yeah.
Well, yeah, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, very happy to have you on. Each week on this show, I present a list of topics to our guests, and we determine whether you have a vague idea about them or you just want to pass, and then I assign points that may or may not be arbitrary and sometimes come in droves and sometimes come in a trickle, depending on the mood I'm in.
Okay.
At the end of the evening, the winner will receive a trophy, and I'm throwing air quotes up for radio, which is a terrible thing to do.
Radio air quotes!
That's the trophy this week, is the radio air quotes trophy of non-existence. So the winner will win that, because no one ever tweets at Nate Regolia with suggestions for trophies.
Maybe we need to set up a... Go ahead.
I don't think anybody tweets anymore. I think it's just the president's echo chamber.
Yeah,
there's a lot of lurking and there's a lot of retweeting, but to your point, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I might need another venue through which to get people to suggest trophy names.
Maybe we need a Vague Idea Twitter account.
I could do that. I could set that up.
Totally,
I got we're officially on the Google Play network now.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we're getting even further into the world.
Oh, welcome, Google Play listeners.
I went to Illegal Pete's for lunch today, cuz Steno is near the Illegal Pete's at Colfax and Race. And I walked through the alley and there was an award. Like one of those crystal awards that people have for some reason. This was like a real estate agent award, but it had been discarded and left on the dumpster. And I thought about picking that up and bringing it here to give as the trophy tonight.
Oh.
But I decided that I'm not a trash person yet, and I don't really want to do that, even though.
I have a football trophy in the back of my car right now, actually. I could go get it.
Ooh, the football trophy! Well, yeah, we can do this, whatever I said about non-existence this week. The air quote trophy this week, and then next week we'll do the football trophy.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I was cleaning out my car, and I found it. I don't know how long it's been in there. It's like a 3-year-old fantasy football trophy that's been in my middle console for like 3 years.
The fantasy football.
Yeah. That's where you get to think about what you want to do with the players.
Did you win for the team that was all like ex-cons?
No, I quit doing that one. I felt really guilty doing that one. Yeah, I used to be part of a fantasy football
league. I thought it was pretty successful, though.
Yeah, but I felt guilty. And I always won first place when I did that one. This was like a third place trophy.
Didn't you guys have like a handsomest team league or something,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, so it was a fantasy football league where nobody knew anything about fantasy football, and you had to pick your team based on a theme. So my theme was all people that had been arrested. And somebody else had people with really good hair. And somebody else had people that were all over the age of 30, which is old.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we all had different themes that had nothing to do with football. And that's how you could draft your team. And, yeah, the ex-cons tended to usually kick everybody else's
butt.
Yeah,
I was going to say there's probably a lot of power there, right? Yeah.
It's a lot of aggression there.
Hard to get a quarterback, though.
That's fair. That's fair.
Hard
yeah.
to get a quarterback.
Yeah.
Who did you get?
When I was doing it, I picked Cam Newton because I got a hot tip that he had been arrested in college for stealing a laptop.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah.
The laptop. I remember that, actually.
Allegedly.
No, because I worked on a campaign called F&V. It was part of Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative, and Cam Newton was one of the faces of the campaign, so we did uncover that nugget.
Other than that, he's like a total stand-up guy, so it was hard to
dabbing.
Find that
tough crowd.
Well, let's get started with the game. So I'm gonna have you guys do rock paper scissors to determine who goes first. It will be 1, 2, 3 shoot, and here we go.
Okay, wait, can we say it out loud? Because I'm kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say it.
Great.
1, 2, 3, shoot.
Oh, she
oh you
Sarah
beat
wins.
Us.
Sarah with scissors and two papers. So, Sarah Smith, you get to pick 1 through 12.
Okay.
And that will correspond to the number. Now, each time we will remove a number, so it will be 1 through 11, then 1 through 10, etc. Just
gotcha.
So you're ready. Would you like topic 1 through 12?
12.
Would you like 12? Oh, wow. Sarah, you have picked the bonus question.
Ooh, the bonus!
Okay. So the bonus this week is a fun one. Your task here is to name 3 famous dogs.
Famous dogs.
Do you have a vague idea about that? So here's what we're going to do. Say if you can name them or not. So basically, yes, you have a vague idea or you want to pass.
I have a vague idea.
You have a vague idea. Great. Shannon.
Oh, yeah, vague idea.
Vague idea about 3 famous dogs. John, 3 famous dogs.
I don't know. Once they go, I don't think I'm going to have a chance.
Just say yes.
No,
just say yes, so. And then you can always back out when it gets to you. Yeah.
All right. John's passing. Okay. Sarah, 3 famous dogs. Go.
Lassie.
Great.
Clifford, the big red dog.
Nice.
Perfect.
Nice one.
Benji.
Excellent. Well done. You're going to get a point. Shannon.
She took mine.
All right. Spuds McKenzie.
Yes.
Air Bud.
Okay.
And Turner or Hooch, whichever one was the dog. And
I'm pretty sure
Hanks.
It was Hooch.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was Hooch.
Nice B-side.
Poor Hooch, too, man. That movie. Nothing like a dog dying from a gunshot wound. That's sad. John, do you want to give it a go? Like,
no,
there's a
I
lot of famous
dogs
still out there.
I don't know.
You got
Beethoven?
Your Rin Tin Tins. You got your...
Think movies.
Oh, man. The dogs don't really get me out to the movies.
Fair, that's fair.
What was the dog's name in the Driving in the Rain? Enzo?
I don't know.
You read that
the
book?
Rain. No.
It's
no, I don't know.
Something about.
Did you see
Isle
of Dogs?
Yes.
That was
Isle of Dogs
one gem after another, but I have to confess, I can't remember any of the actual dogs' names because they were all like King and Rex and Captain or, you know, whatever
you
it was.
You could probably just name King and Rex and Captain and.
Call it good.
It was Enzo.
Snoop? Snoop would have been an option, too. I would have accepted Snoop.
Marley?
It was Enzo?
And me?
John, for knowing it was Enzo, you're going to get half a point, because that book is really good.
What book is that?
It's The Art of Racing in the Rain. You should read it. It's beautiful, because it's told from the dog's perspective. It's about a dog owned by a guy who's like a race car driver, and the dog loves riding in the car with the guy while he drives.
Is it a little kid book?
It's like, I guess it might be YA, yeah. All right. I mean, it's not like difficult to read by any means, but it was very sweet. Good job. Okay. So, Sarah, since you got that correct, you get to pick again.
Oh.
1 through 11.
Let's go with 11.
Oh, wow. All right. Sarah Smith, do you have a vague idea about lifestyles of the rich and famous?
Vague idea, Nate.
Great. Shannon?
Vague idea.
Vague idea. John?
Nah, I don't know that one.
Okay. All right. Sarah, talk about lifestyles of the rich and famous.
Oh, good. What was that guy's name? You know, who was like, lifestyles of the rich and famous. And he showed like all these. Yeah, it was like Robin Leach. Was that who?
That's
was
right,
that
Robin Leach.
Okay,
uh-huh.
I wasn't going to tell you because I wanted to save that.
Oh, So when I think of lifestyles of the rich and famous, I think of like, you know, the ultimate patriarchal emblem, a la Robin Leach.
Robin Leach is the ultimate patriarchal emblem.
Yeah, maybe a bit of a stretch, maybe an overstatement, but you know, or from you know my early childhood, the early 80s.
Uh-huh.
But now it's kind of an interesting thing how it's morphed, and I think much more like the ilks of, you know, from the feminine perspective, the Sheryl Sandbergs and the Marissa Mayers of the world, right? You know, and they're talking about really modern dilemmas of dual parenting, and they're like, oh, well, just hire a nanny and just build a nursery and you're a CEO suite because, well, like, it's hard, you know? And like, oh, you know, things are tough, so just raise your hand and lean in and then lean in again because when you lean in, there's somebody else who's leaning in where you're leaning out, right?
Right. Just give your kids the third bathroom. Like, what's the problem?
Exactly.
I mean, don't. Why are you sharing the one bathroom when you have so many extras lying around?
Or just build another one. Yeah. I mean, what, like, it's hard, you know? And, like, in the interim...
A child can really enjoy a helipad, I think. Everybody knows that.
Well, just, you know, the port-a-john. No, but I actually find that to be one of the most problematic things about being a woman in business and to some of the things that we're dealing with on a more macro-cultural level and the expectations and the demands and what it means to actually get ahead when there are women of the lifestyles of the rich and famous who happen to be proponents of solutions that are only available to a select few.
Very well said.
I could keep going.
I love this. I want to keep us moving forward. But if you have listened to any, I don't think you've listened to this at all yet, but I do a lot of ranting about this kind of stuff. So
gotcha.
I'm very happy that we're on the same page. Shannon,
yeah,
continue talking about lifestyles of the rich and famous.
I'm going to cough and get a beer for a second.
Cough and get a beer. Beer break.
I was, all right. Flu season. This will be fun for recording.
Yay!
Okay, so Robin Leach, TV show where he would go interview really wealthy people. I'm sure our current president was probably on it.
Ooh,
I'm sure he was. And Robin Leach's famous phrase was champagne wishes and caviar dreams, which kind of epitomizes everything that was wrong with the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. through 1995. 1984 to 1995.
It was on that long?
Yeah, I know. I was surprised, too, because I feel like it was one of those things where it was that era of TV where they recorded, like, just a 100-episode season. Because it seemed like it was on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was going to say, did he go from, like, prime time to then, like, the witching hour to then, like, the 2 a.m. kind of graveyard run?
Right.
Or
as people
yeah.
became less materialistic.
Yeah, right.
It had
that
two...
happens? It did for a little while. I feel like
it's
it did
like a different
for a
manifestation,
while.
You know, like
the mid-90s.
It seems to me like TV since then has been nothing but lifestyles of the rich and famous.
Oh.
Ow. Yeah. Yep. You're going right at it.
like MTV Cribs.
Yeah. There is, true. You know, there's The Fabulous Life of, which is a VH1 show that continued this same idea. And there were spin-off series called Fame, Fortune, and Romance.
Ooh.
That was broadcast on ABC from 86 to 87. Didn't do too well, I guess.
Seems like a one-season wonder.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know, everybody's got to do their thing. Shannon, you get a point as well. So Sarah gets a point. Shannon gets a point. John, you're going to hang at half a point. And Shannon, I'm going to let you pick the next topic. Yay. 1 through 10.
I'm going to go with lucky number 7.
Lucky number 7 one. Shannon Page. Mm-hmm. Do you have a vague idea about Rocco the British Parrot and Alexa?
Oh, I do. I have a vague idea.
Hey, all right. John, Rocco the British Parrot and Alexa?
Never heard of him.
Okay. Sarah Smith. No?
No, that was a deep jaw clenching, shaking my head, wondering if I can BS mumbo jumbo my way through this, but I'm going to have to pass.
Okay. No. Two passes. Shannon, tell us about this.
I don't know a lot, and I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I remember reading a story about how Rocco kept ordering stuff on Alexa.
That's correct.
That's basically it.
That's it. Rocco was a parrot, a rescue parrot, adopted by a woman in England.
Yeah, so wait, where was Rocco from? Was he like, and I'm just asking, was he like Cockney? Or was he like a little bit more posh?
Alexa.
Yeah. like that kind of vibe.
Oi! Yeah. Oi! Alexa!
Oi! Alexa!
Or was
Beats!
He...
Do you think "oi" is a wake word for Alexa in East London?
I hope so. That would be my only reason for buying one now, is to just yell "oi" at
it. Or was he like a little more on the crusty side? You know, I'm trying to gauge, like, because I'm curious, I would assume, right, if he's a talking parrot, that his orders would be reflective of the household that he was living in. So I want to know what he was, right? Is he ordering, like, tea and crumpets to pull out every cliche? Or is he ordering, like, Burberry? Or is he ordering...
I have a list of the things that Rocco was ordering. Yes! So, yeah, Rocco is an African gray parrot who was adopted by this woman. He had been ordering strawberries, ice cream, watermelons, raisins, and broccoli. He also ordered a kite. Marion Wisniewski.
Oh my god, so did he watch Mary Poppins?
Oh.
Wondering. The Let's Go Fly a Kite.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Well, and kites are prominent in the Mary Poppins Returns film, which we saw last week.
So we can assume, right, that Rocco was watching Mary Poppins Returns.
I mean, it was England, so yeah. I think that's all they watch, right? It's like Doctor Who and Mary Poppins and and saying oi. the owner, Marion Wisniewski, has had to go through her Alexa order shopping list to cancel these things all the time, because the parrot just keeps doing
it. I think, on the contrary, I think she should get on her parrot's diet.
Right, yeah, just keep eating what like the parrot's prescribing something solid for exactly. you. Like,
and
yeah.
healthy exercise, too.
Now, some fresh air, right?
According to reports, he was booted from the National Animal Welfare Trust Sanctuary in Berkshire because he was too foul-mouthed. So there you go. A little background on Rocco the Parrot.
I love this parrot. I want this parrot.
It kind of sounds like he's rehabilitating, though, if that's what he's telling Alexa.
Yeah,
it
like,
sounds pretty
he's just having He's having reasonable like shopping conversations. He's not swearing, not calling them Burks and stuff. We went over what a Burk is last a few episodes ago.
I'll have to catch up.
It's a Cockney rhyming slang, so it's Berkshire Hunt, and Hunt rhymes with the C word that I won't say. Yeah, so you can call somebody a Burk if you want to call them a hard C word.
Okay.
So Shannon, you get a point for that. So we're at 3 points for Shannon, two Ooh. Points for Sarah, half a point for John, and Shannon, you get to pick again.
This time I'll pick number 4.
Number 4.
4.
All right. Shannon Page, do you have a vague idea about the Dreameister's Veryl chocolate spill?
I'm sorry, I don't even know that word. Veryl?
Veryl. W-E-R-L. But I'm pronouncing it in a German way, which may or may not be correct.
I do not. I will pass on the Veryl chocolate spill.
John, Dreameister's...
I'm stumped.
Veryl, no?
I have no idea.
You get a pass?
Sorry.
Okay. Sarah Smith.
Unfortunately, I have to decline.
All right. Well, I kind of figured this was going to be the one.
the one.
This is... yeah, there's... Okay.
It was like somebody spilled chocolate milk on his crotch, and then somebody thought it was something else and not chocolate milk.
Oh, man. That would have been way easier than this.
I heard it was chocolate. I don't know. And Doctor Who?
Why do you do this to yourself, huh?
I know. I keep coming up with topics that aren't great.
He wants to share it.
But this is a funny topic.
This
put
me out of my misery.
The floor is yours, mate.
December 12th. Just before 8 p.m.
December 12, 2018?
Yes.
Okay.
Liquid chocolate began streaming out of the Dreameister chocolate factory in Westonen, a suburb of Werl, Germany. A tank at the factory had overflowed, prompting a river of chocolate to breach the factory grounds and ooze into the town.
Ooze!
Soon, the leaked liquid chocolate, about a ton in all, had solidified in the crisp December air, creating something of a magical carpet.
Oh my god. Quote,
like a giant, like, Dairy Queen ice cream cone.
Yeah.
It's like a happy version of the Boston Molassacre.
Yeah, yeah. No one died. I mean, come on, like, and molasses is the worst way to die, because it's like, oh, it smells so, ow, it's terrible.
It's spoiling.
Quote, a 10 square meter chocolate pancake formed in the street. So there you go. That was from the fire department. It's just kind of funny, because...
So what was the resolution there? Like, was there was a pancake in the middle of the street, and the pancake just, like, what happened there?
It was a traffic hazard, so the fire department came and cleaned it up.
Yeah, exactly.
And dunked into it.
It's like, it's just kind of like an open season, like, Chris Kindle market. Everybody can, like, dip their ornament in it, or never mind.
I just wanted an excuse to say Stroop waffle.
Sounds disgusting.
I thank you for the waffle drop. Stroop waffle. Tweet at Nate Regolia. You can send me stuff. They used shovels, blowtorches, and hot water to remove the hardened chocolate.
Torch.
Yeah, it was very. I mean, Germans. They're going to be very efficient about this.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to f around. Okay. So there you go. That's that. Everybody's going to get a point because I picked something that was stupidly difficult.
Just one?
Yeah. Well, John's going to get 2 points.
Oh, the contender now.
Puts John at 2.5. Sarah at 3. Shannon at 4. Shannon, you get to pick again.
Oh, this time I'm going to go with number 5.
Number 5. Ah, Shannon Page.
Oh, no.
It's time for a poem. Poem to tear.
It's like now you don't want to be in control of the board because you might get this question.
Shannon Page, if I can find the thing that's in here.
Case for all right. The other,
Shannon Page, is this object un poem or un poem de terre?
Oh, it's a... I forget which one's which. I don't speak French.
Poem is apple.
Okay.
Poem de terre is an earth apple or a potato.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, you can think about apple. It comes from the earth, so it's grown underground.
For the listener at home, the object is a bagel.
I don't know if you can call that
a
bagel.
It's a mini bagel.
Well, it's a
mini bagel. It is I don't know. Let me see the hole in it. The hole is... It's a robust hole.
It's a mini...
You
mini
can get
everything.
A... Is it a 1 or a 2 finger hole?
It looks like a Lender's, like, multi-grain.
It's a finger and a half hole.
It's a pinky and a ring finger.
Yeah, and it's a pinky hole.
But it's a hole.
It's a palm-sized bagel.
Yeah.
Palm. Sized bagel.
Oh! Palm-sized?
Well, I think that settles it. It's palm-sized.
Okay.
Palm.
You gonna go with palm?
That's all.
All right. That is correct. It's an apple. Great job, Shannon. You get
John is disagreeing completely.
Wait, how all of a sudden you're getting smoked by Shannon? She's fine.
Well, palm de terre is kind of a surrealist category designed to just offer someone whatever points I give them. So
whatever
Shannon, you
moment
get a half
of
a point
levity
for that.
With the leavened object.
Ooh.
Are they leavened? Oh no, they are leavened because it's not
a thing.
Yeah, no, it rose.
Yes, it rose.
It has risen. Great job.
It only took 3 days.
So Shannon, you get half a point for that. And you get to pick again.
Oh my goodness. 2.
2. Okay. Hey, this is the new game. We're going to play a new game called Well, Actually. over 2 lightning rounds, I'm going to give each of you a phrase. So I'm going to go through. It's going to be a phrase, a title, or a proper name. You will have the opportunity to correct me because I'm going to have one of the words in this title, phrase, or name incorrect. You correct me in the most condescending way possible,
ooh,
and I will give you points based on that. I think you're going to enjoy this.
All
right. Sure am.
So, for example, if I were to say, Shannon, a wolf in goat's clothing.
Well, actually.
Right. And you would say, a wolf in sheep's clothing. Great. Perfect. So, Shannon, let's start it out. Your first choice, and I'm going to go around the circle, so John, you'll be next. The first one is metal, deer, solid. Shannon. Metal, deer, solid.
That's a phrase? I've never heard that.
It's a title.
Metal, deer, solid?
Uh-huh. It's a video game. That might help you.
I don't know.
It might not help. Oh, no. All right. You can pass it to John.
John, I'm going to pass it.
We're going
to
go fast. John, passing it to you.
Well, actually, Nate, it's Metal Gear Solid.
Perfect, John. Well done. You get a point for that.
Oh, that's going to be really condescending.
Okay.
I was wrong.
Sarah. Nate. Yours is Satan is my mower.
Satan is my mower. So I have some concerns, Nate. I'm not 100% sure what made you think that it was appropriate to phrase something like that. I mean, it's very apropos. Christian Bale, he just thanked Satan in his Golden Globe speech the other night. I'm not sure if you caught that or not. You might have been otherwise preoccupied or indisposed, and I'm not sure if that was in line with where you're at culturally. So, in line with that, I would say... it would behoove you to consider the fundamentals there of Satan is my mother.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's not right,
though. How is it not right? What's wrong with you?
Satan is my motor.
Oh. My motor.
Satan is my motor is what I was looking
for. Satan is
your
mother, Nate.
But I'm going to give you half a point because that was really condescending.
That was really good.
Shannon, you're next. Yours is the fart side of the moon.
Oh, that's so cute. That's what you think it is.
Yeah, it's the popular album, Fart Side of the Moon, right? That it lines up with The Wizard of Oz.
That's adorable. I don't know how to tell you this. Like, I don't... I'm so into the fact that you're into it, and that you're, like, excited about it, and, like, I love that you are in it.
I'm doing me, which dark, I think that's what we're about.
Dark side.
Dark?
Dark.
Dark side?
And Wizard of Oz. But, you know what? Don't stop trying, because that was awesome. Like, good. Like, awesome.
Very good. You get a point for that.
Yeah,
John, you're up again. John, yours is Teenage Mutant Ninja Girdles.
Nate, I don't know how to do this to you, but to basically destroy your whole youth. All this time you've been cheering on Splinter and Donatello.
Yeah, called Splinter because of the splints that are on the sides that keep
keep
torso
all his guts in.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right? I mean, that's what it's about.
I think it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
You mean like the little things with the shells on them?
Yeah.
Yeah?
The shells aren't actually on them. they're like actually part of them. Like, it's not like you can like lift it off. I don't want to interrupt.
Like, they're actually real. You know, they're not just like, they're modeled after the animals, Nate.
Okay, John, you're getting a point. I'm giving Sarah half a point for chiming in. Sarah, you're up again.
Oh boy.
Yours is Franklin Eleanor Roosevelt. Franklin Eleanor Roosevelt.
So I'm going to tell you something, and I'm kind of private about this. I actually know all of the presidents in order.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
One of them.
That's quite a talent. I mean, because some of those, like the Tylers and Taylors, are like, I don't know. I mean, it gets real messy.
Okay. George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe. John Quincy Adams, Andrew Jackson, Martin Van Buren, William Henry Harrison, John Tyler, James Polk. Zachary Taylor, Millard Fillmore, Franklin Pierce, James Buchanan, Abraham Lincoln, Andrew Johnson, Ulysses S. Grant, Rutherford B. Hayes, James Garfield, Chester Arthur, Grover Cleveland, Benjamin Harrison. Grover Cleveland again.
He comes back.
22nd and the 24th president. Yeah. William McKinley, Teddy Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, also to go on to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
He did. Got stuck in a bathtub too, apparently.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. It was William Howard Taft. He was 27. Woodrow Wilson, Warren G. Harding, Calvin Coolidge, Herbert Hoover, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Delano, I believe. Yep, it was a family name. Okay?
Is that Spanish for of the year?
No, I don't believe so.
Delano?
So Franklin Delano Roosevelt, married to Eleanor Roosevelt, who was the first lady.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I see how you got confused.
Yeah, no, so it makes a lot of sense.
I can see where, that's why I really wanted to dial in on that. And I can finish this thing up. So Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Harry S. Truman, Dwight D. Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Baines Johnson, Richard M. Nixon, Gerald R. Ford, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, Bill Clinton.
Don't listen.
I know, I'm like, oh my god, here's where it stumbles a little. I'm like, George W. Bush, which that movie Vice was amazing. Sam Rockwell's presentation was fantastic. Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and then here we are today.
Yeah. So here we are today with no.
Here we are today with barely a president at all. So
we just couldn't come to a consensus as a country, so we've been trying to get by on our
own. I realize that may have been a bit of overkill.
Mm-hmm. No, that was great.
But I wanted to just, you know, paint a whole picture.
I'm gonna give you a point and a half for that, Sarah. And okay, Shannon, you get the last one. 1,000 years of solitude.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
That's the... You correct me. 1,000 Years of Solitude.
No.
It's a book title.
I've never heard of anything like that. I don't... Can you expand a little bit? I don't know.
Written by Marquez?
No. I mean...
Like, what the fuck are you even talking
about? It doesn't sound like anything.
It's like that far off. It's a very classic. it's like 1,000 years off.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm sorry. I'm gonna need more information.
It's like eons off.
It's Gabriel Garcia Marquez. The novel. It's popular with literary circles.
What did you say
the name was? 1,000 years of solitude.
About literary circles anymore these days anyway.
It's true. It's just really Google circles, right? I mean, that took off.
I'm sorry. I'm pretty aware of the books he's written, and he hasn't written anything like that. So you're gonna have to look it up and get back to me on that.
Wow. Wonderful. Okay. Shannon, I'm going to give you a point for just, like, refusing to answer. It was 100 years of solitude for the listener. And that is the end of... Well, actually, great job.
Sadly, I've actually done that in meetings
before. You're just gonna have to.
That's usually my strategy is not to name all the presidents in order, but it's to really just go, you know, tangential with it. Hey, what were we even here for in the first place?
That's so far away from anything I'm familiar with. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, John, since you're bringing up the rear at the moment, I'm gonna let you pick the next topic.
Sounds good. How about the last one?
The last one. All right, John Paros, do you have a vague idea about necropants? Necropants.
Can you spell it for me?
N-E-C-R-O-P-A-N-T-S. Necropants.
No, I have no idea about that.
Okay, Sarah Smith, necropants.
A vague idea.
You got a vague idea?
Vague idea. All
right, Shane Page, do you have a vague idea about necropants?
Am I going to lose points if I guess wrong?
No, I'm not going to. I mean, unless you're, like, intentionally misleading the audience.
Oh, then no, I don't.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, Sarah, tell us what your vague idea is about necropants.
Man. Okay, so when I was a young teenager, I used to steal books off of my parents' shelves. My parents are I'm going to try to figure out how to say this properly and generously. Bohemian.
Your father's a jazz musician.
My dad's a jazz musician. Yeah. You know, they're progressive, super liberal, and so on. And I remember when I was maybe 12, 13 years old, and I stole my mom's copy of A Spy in the House of Love by Anais Nin.
Okay.
And it was my first exposure to necrophilia.
Oh, all right, okay.
And there was this scene, you know, about a necrophiliac experience on the beach. And so when I think about necropants, I think about the pants worn by a necrophiliac. And how, you know, said pants are maneuvered in a given situation to be that much more efficient. I'm
going to
say.
Okay. Yes, well, that's not correct, but...
Yeah. Okay.
Can I throw in my guess?
Throw your guess
not
in.
Not correct.
Bring it in, Shannon. Bring it in.
Yes.
My original thought... Also, it's really hard not to eat this bagel.
Will you move it? Someone can eat it.
It was in the fridge until it was in my backpack for 5 minutes, so it's totally fine.
Leave the bagel alone.
It's an apple now.
It's a hole.
My original...
It's necro pants. It's actually what
you're assuming someone wants to fuck this bagel. Is that you?
Someone does.
I mean, yeah, yeah. You put enough butter on it, and really anything will work.
I was gonna say cream cheese.
I was originally. I can't get past that.
I was a schmear.
Are we talking plain cream cheese?
Oh, that's why they call it pap schmear.
Jalapeno.
It's a pap schmear. Oh God.
John's face right now.
Is that right? I'm out.
You can't embarrass me. My father was an obstetrician.
Have you told the pap schmear joke at Christmas before?
No.
Okay, Shannon, you guess.
I was gonna go a similar direction, but I went to when I was a young teenager and I watched Silence of the Lambs.
Ooh, yeah.
And Buffalo Bill wanted to make an outfit out of the skin of young women.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine that if he were to make a pair of pants, those would be necro pants.
Ooh, well, Shannon Page, you are almost you're correct in principle. This is an interesting thing. Okay. Necropants, also known as nabrok, which I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Literally, corpse trousers are a pair of pants made from the skin of a dead man, which are believed in Icelandic witchcraft to be capable of producing an endless supply of money.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Actually, the
change... I gotta give me some of these necropants so I can quit my job.
The change actually manifests in the ball sack, potentially.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
scrotum.
So women can't have necro pants?
I don't know. It's unlikely that these pants ever existed outside of folklore. But, the ritual for making necro pants is described as follows. If you want to make your own, you have to get permission from the living man to use his skin after his death.
Mm-hmm.
After he has been buried, and he has to die of natural causes, you must dig up the body, flay the skin from the corpse in one piece from the waist down, and as soon as you step in the pants, they will stick to your own skin. Coin must be stolen from a poor widow and placed in the scrotum, along with a magical sign written on a piece of paper. Consequently, the coin will draw money into the scrotum so that it will never be empty, as long as the original coin is not removed. To ensure salvation, the owner has to convince someone else to take ownership of the pants and step into each leg as soon as he gets out of it. The necropants thus keep the money-gathering nature for generations.
Nate, when you die... John, I'm a double
step
back
in your pants.
Can I have your lower half skin?
You want my necro pants? I think I can consent to that. I'm into that.
Because of natural causes, I'm gonna be rich.
You really gotta hope it's natural causes, though.
Do you guys remember this movie, The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants?
Yes.
Yeah. So I like these magical pants that somehow like fit, you know, all the different women and all their different body types, and I applaud that, like, and how body positive they are in this. But I'm like, come on, let's be real here. But with these necro pants, like the manhood of a traveling ball set, you know, like,
yeah.
Can you put pants over the necro pants?
I think the idea is to just
they're
wear
underpants.
The pants.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they are underpants, so I think you could probably wear them underneath. So you've got, like...
I'm not sure I want your ball sack
you got, like,
showing everywhere
out.
I go.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you could wear, like, shorts or
but
something.
But what if they
like,
were magic balls?
It's true.
Well, they are. They're bringing in lots of money.
Apparently, right. Yeah,
but
money
I still
ball.
Want
the
pair
money
of
balls.
Lucrative
yeah.
balls.
They are money balls.
Okay.
Exceptional. Shannon, you're gonna get half a point. And you get to pick the next topic.
Let's do number one.
Number one. All right. Shannon Page, do you have a vague idea about Chicken of the Woods?
No.
No?
No, I do not.
John Parros, Chicken of the Woods?
Nope, zilch.
No?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Sarah Smith, Chicken of the Woods.
Now, unfortunately, I don't have a vague idea about it. I can give you a bunch of mumbo jumbo off the top of my head, but not.
It's going to be better for everybody. Bill.
Yeah, your necropants.
And necropants came from
Moneyballs.
Chicken of the Woods, also known as Leptosporus, is a genus of edible mushroom found throughout much of the world. Some species are commonly known as sulfur shelf, chicken of the woods, the chicken mushroom, or the chicken fungus because many think they taste like chicken. The name chicken of the woods is not to be confused with the edible polypore maitake, known as hen of the woods, or Liophyllum decates, known as fried chicken mushroom. The name means with bright pores. So, yeah, this is something that you can gather in the woods for yourself, though not at certain lines of latitude, because it becomes extremely poisonous if you go too far north or too far south. But
how far north are we talking? Or how far south? I'm curious.
Is that a thing where there's plants that aren't poisonous
like
at certain altitudes, but they become poisonous at other altitudes? That's a thing?
Yes.
Apparently.
I never heard of that.
With this, I had seen something about it. Okay. I'm getting...
So is this like, it grows at the equator? Like, I'm curious now. Where am I going on my next trip?
You got some poisonous mushrooms?
Yeah. Why not? I mean, who says they're poisonous, right? There go the air quotes again here. Come on, Nate.
Yeah, okay. I guess there are some lookalikes.
Ooh, lookalikes.
I can't actually find that part. I'd read something about it, I recalled, but I can't find something to substantiate it. I think just don't eat mushrooms willy-nilly in the woods. That's kind of what that book was about, Into the Wild. Don't eat stuff in the woods. Right? The John Krakauer book? You read that.
No.
No? John didn't read that. Okay, great. Well, Chicken of the Woods, everybody. That was a lot of fun. Everybody's going to get, 30 points. We'll do that.
That's a lot of... Are dings happening right now? That's a lot of dings.
I'm concerned about where you learned
that. Last week's episode, the 20-point ad is ding, 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 forever. It's great. right now, the score is 37 for Shannon, 35.5 for Sarah, and 34.5 for John. And let's see. Sarah, you get to pick the next topic.
Oh.
1 through 4.
I thought we just did one.
Well, I know, but there's always a one, and there's always a last
accordion.
One. I just keep squeezing down.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go back to one, then.
Go back to one. Yeah. Great. Sarah Smith, do you have a vague idea about Globish? Globish?
You know, Nate, every part of me wants to say yes, because I believe in saying yes. the other thing that Nate didn't share is I used to do improv theater as well.
Yes, and.
Yep, exactly. So.
You were very good at it.
Yeah. So, yes, and. But no. No, I don't have a big idea about globe-ish.
All right. Shannon Page. Globish.
No, and I'd like to pass to John.
No, and. Well, that's very generous. A very generous no, and.
Yes,
no,
and I'd like to pass to John.
All right. Okay. Everybody's passed. My mistake again. Globish is a trademark name for a subset English language formalized by Jean-Paul Nérière.
Who?
Jean-Paul Nérière.
Say it again.
Jean-Paul Nérière.
When was he born?
I don't know.
Okay.
We're not linked here. Although the language was trademarked in 2004.
Okay.
It uses a subset of standard English grammar and a list of 1,500 English words. Nérière claims that it's, quote, not a language in and of itself, but rather it's a common ground for non-native English speakers to adopt the context for international business. So there you go. It is a, it's one of the many, like, I came up with a wacky idea for how people could talk to each other and no one actually does it.
So it's
probably.
Like Spanglish, but Globish.
Yeah, or Ebonics is another example of this sort of attempt to quantify language in a way.
What's that one that Captain Kirk is always promoting?
Klingon?
Klingon?
No, before that.
He hates the Klingons! just William Shatner?
William Shatner.
Okay,
yeah.
Can we double-click on Globish?
Weird, like, universal language.
Oh.
So what's an example of a Globish term? I'm curious.
All right, let's see.
Speak some Globish for
us. Yeah. Speak Globish to me. Talk Globish.
Oh, man. Talk Globish to me?
Yeah.
A really great album.
I mean, can you imagine, right? And I tend to have a predilection, you know, towards the international men of mystery anyway, so I'm trying to just prime that, you know, like, talk Globish to me, baby.
I'm going to get an example. Let's see if we can get something here. Okay.
And, yeah, because I'm wondering if it's something it's... And can you imagine if it's like, no me diga hello? I don't know. Like, I can't articulate it in a way that is anything other than clumsy. And so how is that, like, you know? Come on, Nate.
This is, no, I mean, this is right. Really more...
I wonder, yeah. Is it just like a series of gesticulations? Okay. What?
Globish dispenses with idioms, literary language, and complex grammar.
Okay. Ooh.
For example, chat... becomes speak casually to each other in Globish. And kitchen is the room in which you cook your food.
Oh.
Siblings, rather clumsily, are the other children of my parents. So basically it converts English into the way that most foreign languages actually structure.
Yeah, it like unpacks it.
It's so kind of like when you're in another country and you took 3 years of high school Spanish and you're right. In Spain and you're trying to describe something.
Mm-hmm.
I would like the apple of the man that is over here.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. Or instead of like, you know, take me, it could be like, I would like it if you would remove my shirt and then my brassiere and then my pants.
Yeah, or necropants, depending on
the case. Or my necropants, yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Or like, you know, get it. It could be like, I would prefer it if you took off my glasses and pulled my hair. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, right. I like where you're going with this. Okay. This is making the podcast very, yeah. Very randy. So great job. Nobody knew what that was, and that was my fault. So I'm going to go ahead and take away 10 points from everybody. So that puts Sarah at 25.5, Shannon at 27, and John at 24.5, because the points really don't matter.
What's the takeaway noise sound like?
Wah, wah. I don't know. I don't really have a takeaway noise.
Definitely.
John, you get to pick 1 through 3.
I'll take the first one.
The first one. Okay, John Peros, do you have a vague idea about the Noble Eightfold Path?
Oh, jeez. No, I don't know.
No?
No.
Okay, Sarah Smith, no, the Noble Eightfold Path.
What are you doing in your free time that apparently you know about these things?
I mean, I don't know. I know of them.
Okay.
Shannon, Noble Eightfold Path. All right.
Okay, hold on. I'll take a stab at it.
Okay, yeah, John's going to take a stab at it. Come on, John.
I don't know. Like, I don't know what they all are. I'm embarrassed to say that I can't recite it for you.
I don't think I can
But it's like, it's a set of principles that, like, one aligns their life with if you're, like, pursuing like a Buddhist ethic.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Cool.
The Eightfold Path consists of 8 practices: right view, right resolve, right speech, right conduct, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi, which is meditative absorption or union. In early Buddhism, these practices started with understanding that the body-mind works in a corrupted way. Right view, followed by entering the Buddhist path of self-observance, restraint, and cultivating kindness and compassion, and culminating in dhyana or samadhi, which reinforces these practices in the development of the body-mind. Yeah, so they're basically just, they're kind of the commandments of Buddhism.
It's really beautiful. I've been thinking about that a lot, actually, just in terms of, like, what's right.
Yeah.
You know, and this idea, like, because it seems like it's highly constitutive, and in so many ways it's a construct. But at the end of the day, like, I think we ultimately know what's right. So
I mean, I agree. I think that's the thing, and we need more continuous sort of reinforcement for that.
To us?
The Noble Eightfold Path.
The Noble Eightfold Path. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that,
John. I'm going to give you a point.
Yay!
Well done, and you get to pick again, 1 or 2.
I'll take the first one.
The first one. Okay, John Peros, do you have a vague idea about trepanning or trepanning? I don't know my pronunciation as well. T-R-E-P-A-N-N-I-N-G.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Sarah Smith.
I'm asked.
You, Shannon will get there next. Sarah Smith.
Ask
Trepanning?
Shannon.
Trepanning? Trepanning?
No.
No?
No.
All right.
Say it again. No. Just
Trepanning.
Drive it home, Nate.
Shannon Page. Trepanning.
No, it sounds really familiar, idea? But I can't get my head around it.
Okay. Trepanning, also known as trepanation, or making a burr hole, which comes from the old French.
And here we are back to the holes.
It's an apple with a hole in it that you can fuck.
Is this the catfish thing? Is this a way of fishing for catfish?
It is not.
Oh.
It's a surgical intervention in which a hole is drilled or scraped into the human skull, exposing the dura mater to treat health problems related to intracranial disease or
like
release
a lobotomy?
Pressure. To,
no,
just you make a hole in your skull.
This was big in the 70s. People would actually like try and drill into
people
their
still
own
do
skulls.
It.
Yeah.
No way.
People still do it because it is seen to relieve mental illness to some extent.
Like a lobotomy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
no,
it's
not removing because
you don't cut
matter.
Any brain
you're
out.
Just,
yeah.
like,
but you just make a hole so that there's
there was a TV show called Dead Like Me that was about people that had died and become Grim Reapers, and one of the guys on that show, that's how he died, was trying to give himself one of these holes, and he had gone too deep.
Oof!
In ancient times, holes were drilled into a person who was behaving in what was considered an abnormal way to let out what people believed were evil spirits. Evidence of trepanation has been found in prehistoric humans, human remains from Neolithic times onward. The bone that was trepanned was kept by prehistoric people and may have been worn as a charm to keep evil spirits away. Evidence also suggests that trepanation was primitive emergency surgery after head wounds to remove shattered bits of bone from the fractured skull, to clean out blood that often pools under the skull after a blow to the head, and such injuries were typical of primitive weaponry such as slings, war clubs, getting stomped on by a mammoth, etc. So there you go.
Next topic, please.
Next topic. Nobody knew that, so I'm going to give you all, let's see, we're just going to give you all 40 points.
Ooh!
40 points! So, I probably can't even bother to do all of the chime noises for that, because this would be absurd.
Yeah, it's like, ka-ching, ka-ching! Yeah. I can't do a cash machine noise. I'm just
So, score break right now before we enter the final topic. Shannon is at 67,
Ooh!
And Sarah and John are tied at 65
Ooh!
And a half.
Ooh!
Close. It's a close one.
Neck and neck.
So let's see. I'm going to give a special guest first pass at the topic.
Uh-oh.
Sarah Smith, do you have a vague idea about the Waffle House Index? The Waffle House Index?
Yeah, I do have a vague idea about that.
Do you? Great. Shannon Page, the Waffle House Index.
I do not.
Okay. John Peros, the Waffle House Index.
It's kind of ringing a bell, but I don't think I'll come up with anything.
Okay. Okay, well, let's see what Sarah says, and you might decide that you've got something. Sarah, go ahead.
Okay, so, full disclosure.
Uh-huh.
I used to run the marketing department at Qdoba, and much of my marketing and advertising experience is actually in fast food, fast casual, and casual dining. And so I'm going to...
It's not fast food, it's good food. Quickly.
No, so it's QSR. If you want to like really unpack some of these industry terms, then QSR stands for quick service restaurant.
Okay.
Right. Which is not what Waffle House is.
No. Waffle House is a more conventional restaurant.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that would be in the vein of conventional dining, which you would see a la like a Village Inn or an Olive Garden. Even, you know.
When you're here, we're all family right now because this is an Olive Garden.
Here we are.
And as an Italian, I can declare...
Where's my unlimited breadsticks?
As a person of Italian lineage, I can declare an Olive Garden
where is your bottomless pot of marinara?
You don't want to know.
I would like some
It's in my necro pants. It does not taste good.
The Waffle House Index... I actually have no idea. I just wanted to kind of riff with it. And I'm like, it goes back to my yes and, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go with the Waffle House Index... as a Waffle House based on its proximity to other, perhaps, national landmarks. Between Denver, where I know that there's a Waffle House somewhere around here.
There's one on Santa Fe.
Almost
Alameda.
So it is
there's one in Aurora.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. So let's say that it's approximately like 70 miles from Rocky Mountain National Park, and we're going to call that the Waffle House Index.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, okay.
That's not correct.
No, I didn't think it was.
John, do you want
to... I thought the Waffle House Index had something to do with, like, conservative voting patterns.
That's very, I mean, yeah. Well,
something like that.
I was wondering about the number of waffle
houses per state indicate some amount of redness in it or something like that.
Or is it gerrymandering? Is there an impact?
It does relate to a government organization. I will give you that.
The NRA.
The Waffle House Index is an informal metric used by the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
FEMA!
Right!
To determine the effect of a storm and the likely scale of assistance required for disaster recovery. Quote, if you get there and the Waffle House is closed, that's really bad. That's where you go to work.
Oh, no.
That's what it was. That's
the term was coined. The term was coined by FEMA Administrator Craig Fugit in May 2011 following the 2011 Joplin tornado, during which two Waffle House restaurants in Joplin remained open.
Because Waffle Houses don't close.
They don't close.
The only thing I was going to say is that on Christmas morning, my dad and I went to Waffle House.
Did you really? Which one?
In Tucson.
Oh. Dan Stoneking, FEMA Director of External Affairs, wrote in a FEMA blog post, As Craig often says, the Waffle House test doesn't just tell us how quickly a business might rebound. It also tells us how the larger community is faring. The sooner restaurants, grocery, and corner stores or banks can reopen, the sooner local economies will start generating revenue again, signaling a stronger recovery for the community. The success of the private sector in preparing for weathering disasters is essential to a community's ability to recover in the long run.
I didn't even think Waffle Houses could close.
I didn't think they had locks.
I question using the Waffle House as a way to talk about the economic health of a community, but that's... Maybe my bias against the Waffle House and the service. Because they don't close.
It's
like a Village Inn. It would have been the Village Inn Index or whatever.
No, like, Village Inn's closed, though. Village Inn's definitely
closed.
But
Village Inn, is that a national chain?
Yeah.
Is it?
It is, yeah. They have, I think, like 44 or 47. I can't remember the exact figure. So my old boss, who was the CMO of Qdoba, is now VP of marketing at Waffle House. Village Inn.
I spent so much time at Village Inn in high school that they tried to institute a rule about how long you could sit at Village Inn before you got kicked out.
We didn't have Village Inn where I grew up in Chicago, but we went to this place called Jack's, and it wasn't even in Chicago. It was like technically in this place called Skokie, and it was like Queens. Skokie's like Queens. I don't know how else to...
Jan lived in New York for a while.
That's where we used to go and smoke cigarettes and, you know, have the unlimited refills and coffee and, like, just kind of explore who we were, you know, and talk about Jack Kerouac.
You're just having your Reality Bites moments in the booth place
the
that serves pie.
The vinyl booth, like, held together with duct tape. I like it, and I like the idea of, a Waffle House Index. I'm a huge fan of talking points, just generally, like as a way to make things a little bit more accessible and user friendly. So I'm a big fan of that one, sort of. I think. I don't know. If I really unpack it, then I'm terrified of the state of things.
No. Yeah,
but,
we could go into a long thing about what's about to happen later this evening,
I know,
but I don't think that's worth
and
the
I
time.
And I forgot to set my DVR to record that, so
just because you wanted something like. Just cry, scream.
No, because I want to just have a better understanding of what's actually going on, and I don't.
Yeah,
I'm grabbing at straws in an attempt to do so. So. And on that note,
Well, hey, great job. Final score.
Uh oh.
Sarah, you have 65 and a half points.
Oh.
You were in third place.
I was.
We would love to have you back to play again. You've been an excellent
guest.
Yeah, you're gonna get another chance. John, you have 66 and a half points.
Whoa!
You're in second place.
What
happened?
It was that Waffle House Index.
I was wrong about the Waffle House Index.
We knew that it was government related, so I gave you a point.
I don't know.
And Shannon, you are our winner this week of the, what did we say it was? The air quote trophy of nothingness. You win the air quote trophy of nothingness with 67 points.
Woo!
Shannon Page, do your victory lap real quick, if you will.
I'm doing it.
Anything you want to say.
I'm running around the table.
Great.
I'm I'm lapping.
The thing is that you're in such incredible shape that, like, you are not breathless or even sounding like you're moving around the microphone. I love that. Shannon, do you have anything that you would like to plug as the winner of this week's episode?
Oh, you know, I warned Sarah before this episode that she's going to have to plug something, and I forgot to think of something to plug myself, so no.
Okay, great. John? Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
No, thank you.
Nothing? Okay. Nothing. Well, Sarah, would you like to plug anything?
Yeah, I would like to plug you. And I don't mean just like you, Nate, or, you know, you, this show, or you, John, or you, Shannon, but like you yourself, you know, the listener. I think, yeah, I know,
yeah.
Right?
I'm
going to go with that. And I see this as an open invitation, especially, you know, as we're kicking off a new year, to embrace exactly who you are and to celebrate every moment that you have to be the best version of yourself.
That's beautiful.
Aww.
Damn right. That's pretty much what I would have said. thank you guys so much for listening to A Vague Idea. I'm Nate Regolia. This has been a real pleasure. Everybody have a great day, night, mid-afternoon, brunch, whatever, wherever you are. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye!
Bye, thanks for having
thank
me!
You.
Bye. Ooh!
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, with Shannon Page and John Perros. If you like this podcast and you like anime, you should check out my podcast with Sean Grolkowski called You Better Believe This. That's found at moleholeradio.com. If you like science fiction books, you should check out the press that Sean and I started. It's called Spaceboy Books, and you can find us at readspaceboy.com.